Welcome back. I don't see Senator Sharon in here. Is she? Senator Lynch. Okay. Senator Lynch, we are ready for you. Senate File 2708.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I'm here tonight with Senate File 2708. You'll recall you heard testimony on this last week. There were some questions surrounding the bill, and we laid it on the table during the last week. I have been able to work with the department, work with Senator Torres Ray, Senator Marty, and various stakeholder groups. And I think one of the things that we learned along the way that was a positive development, and I know that Senator Torres Ray is interested in following up on this, is work that's being done within the department with regards to cultural competency. And that was one of the areas that we spent a lot of discussion time on. And so, Mr. Chair, I have no additional comments and no amendments, and am happy to report that I think there was some good and valid conversations that took place surrounding this bill, and I expect that we will hear more on some related issues in subsequent bills.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Senator Lynch, thank you so much. I really appreciated the conversation and the opportunity that was open. I learned a lot about what is happening right now and what DHS is doing with several other organizations, and I'm very excited about the opportunity of coming back to explore this. So thank you for opening that conversation.
Thanks, Senator.
Any other questions? If not, Senator Lynch, would you like to move the bill?
Madam Chair, thank you. Madam Chair, I would move that Senate File 2708 be recommended to pass.
And refer to education. As amended.
As amended, and refer to the Committee on Education.
All of those in favor of that motion? Excuse me. We have a question from staff. Education, yeah. Okay, there was a question as to another request, but it will be referred to education. So all of those in favor of that motion signifying by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think we're going to call Senator Lori. I guess we're going to go from the bottom up because we... Oh, yeah, Senator Erickson Ropes is here. So, yes.
All right. Whatever you want.
Senator Sharon is here. Sorry, I just don't see her. Senator Sharon, where are you? Okay, we're ready for you, Senator. You were first in our agenda, so welcome to the committee. Senator Sharon will present Senate File 2866. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to present on Senate File 2866. I have with me Tim Held, who is the director of the Statewide Trauma System, who will be presenting with me this evening, and Jim Golden, who is the director of Health Policy Division at the Minnesota Department of Health. I would like to do is simply explain what we're here about and walk through the bill, if that's your preference, and then we'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. That would be great. That would be good if you can walk through the bill and just get your testifiers to provide their testimony.
Okay, thank you very much. This is a proposal that updates Minnesota statutes to foster continued development of the Minnesota's ever-maturing and improving statewide trauma system. And in the language of this bill, what we're trying to do is ensure that the trauma system continues to be efficient and effective in providing life-saving care for injured patients. What this statewide trauma system does is allow all of the players, all the various levels of service providers, to be a part of a system and to be able to communicate between one another to create better outcomes. Minnesota's trauma system is growing rapidly. Presently, there are 79 designated trauma hospitals, and all of the hospitals are planning to become designated in the next few years. The statewide trauma system was enacted in 2005 and recently has submitted a report, which I'm certain has been made available to all of you. And it recommended a variety of actions that we are presenting to you this evening. Within this piece of legislation, we have some objectives that come from the proposal, and that is to integrate pediatric trauma hospitals into the trauma system. Presently, there are not pediatric trauma hospitals identified or integrated into the system. The proposal has as its objective to... enhance patient privacy and protections and to facilitate a system-wide quality improvement program. Now, to speak to the proposal specifics, if you have the bill in front of you, I do have an amendment, by the way. It should be at the table, and I would like that to be introduced at this time.
Thank you, Senator. Do we have the amendment? I don't think it has been passed around.
You're making copies.
Okay. Senator, we're making copies, so we're going to move the amendment in a few minutes after we get copies to the members. So we need to wait, and if you could just continue.
Okay, I'll be glad to do that. I think you have the original bill language, and what the amendment does is remove two sections from the bill, section 6 and 7, is it? Section 7 and 8. 7 and 8, yes. So until the amendment comes, you'll at least understand that those are the components of the bill that will be deleted.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I move that we delete Sections 7 and 8 and skip the photocopying.
Okay. Section 7.
Isn't that right? 7 and 8?
7 and 8.
7 and 8. Now, let me make sure there is... So you are referring just to the new language in 7 and 8, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you. We can do that if that's okay with members.
Absolutely. Sure.
So Senator Higgins moved that we move an oral amendment to delete Sections 7 and 8. Any questions on that motion? All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Senate File 286 recodifies existing language establishing a trauma registry and otherwise updates language that governs the statewide trauma system. In Section 1, their language amends a reference to the Trauma Center Association of America and deletes outdated language. That's simply technical changes. Section 2 requires the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Health to designate 6 rather than 4 levels of trauma hospitals. Right now, they have the authority to designate 4 levels of trauma hospitals. The two new designations would be for pediatric state designation, and it would integrate these facilities into the trauma system. There's a growing national and state interest in pediatric trauma centers, and our research indicates that pediatric trauma patients have a better outcome if they're verified as pediatric trauma centers. And outcomes and quality is part of what we're trying to achieve in this legislation. Section 3 of the bill designates the Minnesota Department of Health, it allows the Minnesota Department of Health to designate 2 new levels of trauma hospitals, level 1 or level 2 pediatric trauma. Section 4 classifies all information and reports related to the designation and redesignation of trauma hospitals as private data on individuals and non-public data. So, I just want to check here for a minute. What's important about this is that the designation of trauma hospitals is central to the trauma system. Physicians and nurse teams review each hospital's request to seek this designation, and they review that application for compliance with trauma policies and evaluate clinical care, and this includes reviewing medical records, and that's where the issue of privacy comes forward, is that it's reviewing medical records. So a hospital site review information is reported then to the Minnesota Department of Health. Although all patient identifiers are blinded, some of the concerns that have come forward that in certain parts of the state where there may be very few experiences of trauma, that it would still be easily identifiable if it isn't protected at some level, so that unless in those situations where there probably is a unique situation rather than a aggregate group, it might be easy to determine private information about a person because the local community knows about the event. Section 5 recodifies some changes in the existing language establishing a trauma registry. Subdivision 1 under Section 5 requires the Minnesota Department of Health to establish and maintain a central registry of persons who sustain major trauma. This does not change the authority of the Minnesota Department of Health, and there's no losses to the department with this authorization. Subdivision 2 requires a trauma hospital to participate in statewide trauma registry and provides that the consent of the injured person is not necessary. Subdivision 3 lists information trauma hospitals must submit to the trauma authority in this area. Subdivision 4 outlines the Minnesota Department of Health's rulemaking authority in this area. And what's unique in the language is apparently there was a time limit that was established under the old law, and as you'll notice in this language, the last sentence in this subdivision states that the commissioner may adopt rules at any time. To implement this section is not subjected to the requirements of Section 14.125, which mandates that the rules be done within a certain period of time, approximately 18 months. So this is a specific change. Subdivision 5 grants immunity from liability to any person or facility furnishing information required under this section, provided the person is acting in good faith. Subdivision 6 classifies data collected under this section. And Subdivision 7 requires the Department of Health to issue an annual report and allows fees for the provision of data. Section 6 of the bill updates references to the membership of a trauma advisory council and deletes outdated language. And then Section 9, which would become Section 7, I assume, it repeals Minnesota statute Section 144.607, which is the old language where trauma information was collected under the traumatic brain injury section of the law, and now creates its own separate specific registry for trauma. And with that, I will let my testifiers answer your questions.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. Do you wish to present testimony, or you're just available to answer questions?
Do you have a preference?
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Jim Golden. I'm the Division Director for the Department of Health. We are here just to answer questions. We'd be happy to answer the committee's questions.
Thank you, Mr. Golden. Senator Bergen.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, the Trauma Registry, Section 5, you went over that so fast, I didn't catch if there are changes to existing law or if this is just a recodification.
Madam Golden. Chair, Senator Berglund, in your packet, I believe that you have a handout that has it shows the recodification of the statute that has both the new language and current law right next to each other. I would be more than happy to walk you through those subdivisions quite quickly. Subdivision 1 is just the exact same as existing law. There are no changes to that. Subdivision 2 is the same as existing law. It just comes from two portions of statute and is now brought into one integrated section. With regard to Subdivision 3, this is the data that will be collected in the trauma registry. This language does not change the data that we're collecting. It is the exact same data. We are simply more descriptive of what we are actually collecting in the registry. Subdivision 4 is the same as the existing statute with the exception of the last sentence. The commissioner may adopt rules at any time to implement this section and is not subject to the requirements of section 14.125. And what this is this is just a clarification. Right now, the trauma registry was originally put into statute as part of the traumatic brain injury spinal cord injury registry. What this recodification does is it takes it out of that section, puts it into a new section. There are already rules that exist under the TBI registry, and so hence those rules would have satisfied the time requirements that exist in Chapter 14. What this sentence is intended to do is to indicate that simply by moving it to a new section of statute, it does not re-trigger that time clock that exists in Chapter 14. It is just a technical change to show that there is no change. Subdivision 5 is identical. In Subdivision 6, there is a change. It has to do with the data classification. Right now, all classification of data in the trauma registry is classified as private data on individuals. This data classification remains. We continue to keep individuals' data private. However, we change the data that is not on individuals, so that would be data on trauma hospitals. We also classify that as non-public. And the rationale for that is actually to enhance patient privacy. In many rural hospitals that are designated as a trauma hospital, there are very few major traumas. And so if a person were to request the public data that would be part of a trauma hospital, it's very possible that because of the small numbers, there might be some opportunity to learn information about the patient. And then finally, Senator, on Subdivision 7, there is a new requirement that the commissioner annually publish a report that includes comparative data about trauma hospitals. We thought this was important to ensure that there was information about the performance of those hospitals, given that in the previous Subdivision 6, we made the data about them not public. And those are all of the changes.
So,
thank you. Senator Bergen.
So I have two questions, Madam Chair. The first one is, this report that you're going to publish annually, how will that be paid for?
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, these are analyses and calculations that would be done as part of the trauma system on a regular basis as part of the ongoing quality improvement, working with the statewide advisory council as well as the regional trauma advisory councils. So we are simply assuring that we will publish the data that we can as part of our routine work.
Senator Bergen. Madam Chair, Mr. Golden isn't going to take any additional staff or any money to print the report and mail it to people or whatever.
Mr. Golden.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglin, no, it won't take additional staff. This would be work that is already being done. We would simply make sure to incorporate it into a report that is made publicly available. And so we do not anticipate this costing any additional funding.
And the second question has to do with, this was the traumatic brain injury and spinal cord registry, and the purpose of that was in large part to make sure that providers were making sure that people that have this type of injury are referred for services rather than just being discharged to home. And I'm concerned about whether that prompting of these medical facilities will continue with the recodification.
Mr. Golden.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, we don't do anything to change the function of the traumatic brain injury, nor do we change any of their statutory language. The way that this works, it might be easiest if you were to look at the recodification subdivision 1. What you would see there is the trauma registry is really initially described in Minnesota Statutes 144.607. That section is only about the trauma registry, and then it cross-references various authorities from within the traumatic and brain injury section of law. So what we do is we simply bring those cross-referenced sections up into a new section that we call 0.6701, and the repeal is just of that first little section. So this in no way changes any aspect of the function nor the statutory authorities associated with the TBI SCI registry.
Senator Berglund. Chair, I lied. I have one more question.
Senator Berglund.
So how has the TBI registry been working? It's been around for quite a few years now, and has it increased the number of people who actually get post-hospital care and rehabilitation?
Madam Chair, I'm Tim Held. I manage the state trauma program, for the record. Senator Berglund, actually, we would have to ask the folks that run the TBI registry for that. I don't have that information in front of me. That's the TBI registry is run out of the Injury and Violence Prevention Unit. So we would ask them. We can certainly ask them and get you some feedback on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question on page 2, subdivision 3. You've deleted the reference to the by September 1st, 2009 Commissioner's report to the legislature. Was that report made?
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, indeed it was. It was made and it was delivered to the appropriate chairs in the Legislative Reference Library.
Okay. Thank you. And Madam Chair,
Senator Hahn.
And Senator Sharon or your testifiers, I'm a little unclear, frankly, about what we're trying to accomplish with this registry, and I have some concerns about it. One of the concerns I have is with respect to not requiring the consent of people who are injured to participate in this registry. And could you explain why it's necessary to, first of all, what's being accomplished by this registry? What is the practical value that this is bringing to the state? And why is it necessary to compel people to surrender data about their conditions without their consent?
Thank you. Yeah. Mr. Hale, do you want to take that question?
Yes. Madam Chair, ahead. Yes. Thank you, Senator Hahn. I'll address the first part, the purpose of the registry. And it's for quality improvement purposes for the hospitals. That's really the primary purpose of it. So they are able to take a look and do quality work on how they're treating their trauma patients, how trauma patients are being handled and managed, and if there needs to be any changes to the way that they're handling those severely injured patients in such a time-sensitive manner. If a patient is under-triaged or over-triaged is something that the hospitals need to be looking at. In other words, if a patient comes in with a high acuity or a high index of injury or suspicion of injury, there's certain things that a trauma hospital is expected to do. There's certain teams of people they're supposed to bring in. There's certain procedures and policies that they need to do in order to facilitate rapid care and transfer and stabilization of those trauma patients. So they use this registry data to evaluate whether or not they're actually doing that. Did a patient slip under the radar in their care and didn't get that full treatment that they should have been having or that response internally? Likewise, are they over-responding with resources to patients that didn't need those sorts of resources that come to them to care for them at the local hospital before they stabilize and transfer them? So that's just one example. There's a vast majority of other examples of clinical work and clinical practices or vital signs being taken on head injury patients. And so there's a vast array of sort of quality initiatives that are happening at the local level. And then being able to compare that to aggregate state data with other facilities that are of the like size and have the same sorts of patients that come in to see how are they measuring against other hospitals. And so that's, again, a quality and a benchmark measurement that that is going to raise the bar of the trauma care throughout the state. So that's really the primary purpose.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And is it Dr. Hilt?
No,
Mr.
Sir.
Hill. Okay, thank you. To the point you're making, and I read somewhere that we've been doing. I know the original bill here was passed in 2005, but we've been collecting some data for 17 years. Has this data had the effect of improving quality? Has that been established that in the course of doing this over the past whatever number of years that there is some measurable improvement that has resulted as a consequence of that?
Mr. Hill.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn. The data has been collected, as Dr. Golden mentioned, under the TBI, traumatic brain injury statute, and that's they've been collecting injury data, not as comprehensive on all the sorts of injuries that the trauma registry is interested in, just a very small slice of injuries, brain injuries, is what they're using to collect and to serve the function that Senator Berglund was just speaking about. So in terms of the purpose of the trauma of the TBI registry was to facilitate resources. And when the system was first established in 2005, we were tagged on to that. But here we are 4.5 years later with now 87 hospitals participating, and we see the need is more quality improvement than it is providing a particular resource for a particular type of injury. So we're moving in that direction to evaluate the program. We've spent 5 years or 4 years establishing the foundation. Well, now we have to do the measuring and to see if how it's going.
And Madam Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Hill. I guess I take it from your responses that we haven't seen any benefit after, 5 years of doing this yet, but you're hopeful that we will. But and I appreciate that. But I guess the other part of my question, original question, was about the consent. Why is it that we need to do this without consent? It would seem to me that if you're collecting data on people who are injured, it would be a matter of simply asking them or someone who is responsible for them to be willing to participate in having their data collected. Why would we not want to do that?
Dr. Golden.
Madam Chair and Senator Han, let me just give you an example, I think, of the challenges of trying to do consent in this type of a situation. If you are in a rural area and you are in a car accident and you have had a major trauma, you are probably unconscious and unable to communicate. It is a severe life-threatening situation. In all likelihood, you are put into an ambulance and you are taken to one of the local hospitals. That is a level 3 or 4 trauma center. They will prep you and prepare you for transfer. You're probably then brought into an air ambulance and then transferred to a definitive care at a level 1 or level 2 hospital. So just in that small little time period of getting from the accident scene to definitive care, you have already had 3 transfers, and you have been unconscious or unaware for most of the time. And again, the primary purpose of the trauma registry is really for hospitals as well as the EMS providers, both ground and air, to be able to use their data, collect their data in a common set of variables so that they can look at what do they need to do to be able to improve when they have similar situations. And so realistically, the patient is in no ability to consent to that. And so under the existing law, there was the decision made 5 years ago that it would be collected without consent. I think it's just for the practical issue of getting all of the various handoffs and participants providing care in that patient's care to be able to get common information about the ways to best treat that individual.
Well, and that's Madam Chair,
17 years.
Senator,
and Doctor, I appreciate it. I'm not sure that you've answered my question. However, it seems to me that it would be certainly possible for someone in the circumstance you described to have data collected, which would be, it seems to me, a matter of course in treating a patient. You're going to collect all kinds of information. But then taking that information and putting it into a registry, that doesn't have to be done at the time the accident occurs. That could happen sometime subsequent to that. And it would seem to me that before you did that, you would want to have permission from the patient and or the family, depending on who's able to make that decision, to participate in that. I guess I understand it's convenient for the system to have the data and not require the consent, but I'm concerned about why we would want to set the standard and say, we are going to take this data about you and your injury and put it into a record for us to do research on and use it in ways that we think is appropriate, and you don't have a say in whether you want to participate in that. That, to me, doesn't seem right. And you haven't really answered why we should do that, except that it's convenient. And I understand that, but why should that set aside the concern of people who say, well, I don't want to be in a registry. I don't want my injury to be in that registry because I'm concerned about something. I don't know, but shouldn't there be a personal obligation to say that kind of data ought to be given up only voluntarily rather than by force?
Madam Chair, Dr.
Golden.
And Senator Han, I don't think that we are doing it for convenience for research purposes. These data are collected both by EMS transport as well as hospitals for their own quality improvement internally as well as across the system. So the function is not for us to do research in some generic sense. It is really for the providers of trauma care to be able to improve their services. And so for all of those individuals to be able to connect their data and really understand how the care that they delivered, whether it was at as a first responder at the accident or as that trauma hospital that was preparing them to get to definitive care, there isn't an opportunity for the patient to consent in that. And so I think it was just a practical issue from the standpoint of allowing quality improvement across the trauma system that this data needed to be collected in a consistent way to be connected up.
Well, and Madam Chair, just
Senator Hahn.
Last comment on this. I come from the private sector, and I can think of lots of examples of companies who would like to be able to collect lots of data about their customers, because it's useful to them in various ways, maybe for quality or maybe for improved service, and I understand that. But typically, we don't let them take that information under force of law without the consent of the people who get. In fact, we've had debates about that very issue in various circumstances. So why we should say, as a government, we're going to do that very thing we say the private sector shouldn't do, I'm troubled by that. And I understand that there's a need to find data and use it to measure quality. I would assume that in many cases people would voluntarily say that's fine, but they should have the ability and the right to understand what their data is going to be used for and to say yes or no. And I guess I'm concerned about that provision, and I'm not sure why we're doing it except that we can. And if we're not willing to allow private sector organizations to do the same thing by force, I'm not sure we should do it.
But Senator Corian has a question.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess Dr. Golden said something about the ambulance, and I see a couple of representatives are here from the Ambulance Association, and I guess I have a question if they would like to step forward and if this data would be helpful for them to continue to serve the population that they do. I'd like to know whether they're supportive or opposed to this bill.
Thank you. If you could please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and members, Buck McAlpin, the legislative chair for the Ambulance Association. Yes, we are supportive of this bill, and I think Senator Hahn has some good questions about data. But the data that we enter through the Emergency Medical Services Society goes through a system called MnSTAR. It's required under state law that we submit all of our ambulance data, every single ambulance service in the state, whether it's by air or by ground, and then it just goes into a large aggregate pile. So we don't pick out by names or by social security numbers. It's just a 47-year-old male that was involved in a trauma-type accident. Many of these patients are in critical condition, not able to sign for authorization. And by the time we finish with them, as Mr. Held testified to, they may go to a level 4 center. A helicopter from North Memorial or St. Cloud might go to Bemidji and pick them up. So there's numerous points where these patients are touched before they end up at the final destination. So if we can't compile this data into one data bank and work with the statewide trauma folks of how we provide better patient care, and back to the question about triage and over-triage, we want to make sure we're not transporting patients in expensive helicopters that don't need that type of care. So as an industry, by looking at these types of patient, which the patients we're talking about are a very finite number of what's called major trauma patients. Out of about 450,000 ambulance runs a year, we figure that number is about 5%, Tim, that are considered major trauma. So this is a very important tool to measure to be sure, one, we're doing the right thing, and two, we're doing it as efficiently as possible.
And
thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. McElkin. I think I understand that there's always concern when government seems to be encroaching into people's private lives where we're collecting data that people feel uncomfortable with, but it appears that this is just, I think, to help your industry. I don't see any thing that's going to invade in somebody's privacy, and so I see nothing wrong with it. So, Madam Chair, if nobody has moved the bill, I would so move that Senate File 2866 be recommended to pass, and I'd have to ask Council where it would be going.
Thank you. Senator Corian, I would love to do that right now, but we have a person who wishes to testify against
Madam
this
Chair.
Bill.
Okay.
So we have Senator Berglund, Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Senator Hand, you know, I carried the original bill that created the
TBI,
Traumatic Head Injury and Spinal Injury Registry, and it was brought to me by consumers and organizations that provide post-hospital services. And they wanted the bill the way it was because a lot of people with these problems were being discharged from a hospital. They were able to go home from a hospital, but they were not able to function in their lives. And many of the consumers did not know about the services that would be available to them after their hospitalization. So the purpose of the registry was to help connect the patients with the services. And they wanted to have the language in there about having the people on the registry without having to have their permission.
And Madam Chair.
Excuse me, Senator. We were trying to discuss about where do we refer this bill. So, Senator Hand.
Thank you. I appreciate, Senator Berglund, your history on where this came from. And I certainly believe there are reasons that have been mentioned why this would make sense. But I think there are, to me, we ought to allow for people who are not comfortable with this to say no. One of the things, for example, that I am a little concerned about in Section 5 of the bill, line 3.7, is referring to Section 144602 that defines major trauma. And this is, as I understand it, reading the change sheet that was provided, this is a new change. It wasn't in the original law that defines trauma as being a sudden severe injury or damage to the body caused by an external force that results in potentially life-threatening injuries or that could result in the following disabilities: impairment of cognitive or mental abilities, impairment of physical functioning, or disturbance of behavioral or emotional functioning. So it seems to me that we've broadened the definition of trauma to include things that might not be exactly what you describe, but could be things much less severe that would fall under the definition of this of trauma as 144602 defines it. So it seems like what we've done is we said we're going to define trauma a little more broadly than we have understood it before, and then we're going to collect the data, which, again, I think that collecting data as a course of treatment is understandable, but then to take that data and permanently put it into a registry without even seeking to get consent from people, I think that's a little extreme. And so I guess I'm troubled by that, and maybe you want to comment, somebody on from the department, on why the change in definition of major trauma that we have in this bill.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Senator.
It's Mr. Hale.
I don't have the part of the bill or the part of the trauma statute that I think you're referring to, but I'm familiar with it. And that definition of major trauma needed to be defined because that's what the system is designed to care for, not the routine bumps and bruises. And that was that definition was done with consultation with the TBI and SCI epidemiologists that have been working with injury for all these many years. And also it matches a Center for Disease Control definition. So it's a very consistent definition for major trauma. And so that's why that was used. And so how that plays out is hospitals then have specific injury. There's a specific flow chart of which injuries patients have in order to enter into the registry. So it's not going to be just all the bumps and bruises or broken bones. It's very specific to these critical injuries. So that's what that's used for. And the in terms of the consent piece as well, when the private patient data is used specifically to match records, as Buck was talking about before, when we have care in one event, we have care that's spread out over, say, four providers, a local ambulance, a local hospital, a helicopter, and a final thing. And that's really one event. But we have four different records of care that's being provided. And so that's the only way to be able to tie those into one single event. After that, there's no use for the private data. That's just simply to match it into one event. After that, the data that's being used for the quality improvement and all the pieces of the system that we've been talking about are really injury-specific and time-specific, but not tied to a specific case or a specific patient at all.
Members, I'm aware of the time. We have a person who wishes to testify, and I would like to give her the opportunity to do so. Unless you have questions, I would like to move. Ms. Twyla Brace has asked that we give her some time to testify. Welcome to the committee, and if you could please introduce yourself for the record. Do you have a handout?
I do.
Okay. If the staff could please distribute that.
Madam Chair, and members of the committee, my name is Twyla Brace. I'm president of the Citizens Council on Healthcare. And one of our great concerns with trying to protect patient and doctor freedoms is to protect the patient, the confidential patient-doctor relationship and the privacy of medical records. But one need only look at the bill as well as the 2010 report on the state to the state legislature, which there's a copy of sitting right there, to understand how far this will take Minnesota from the right to not be a subject of government surveillance and intervention. But first, before I go into the two sections of the bill, let me just share with you a few problems noted by a consultant that are listed in the report that the department hired. So the consultant noted the department's lack of consistency in adhering to their own criteria for trauma center designation. And I'm mentioning these because this is a financial bill. And the consultant also noted that the trauma center designation is voluntary rather than based on need, so anyone who wants it can go after it. Now, to the two sections, I call your attention to line 2.4 and line 3.22, where the department continues to be exempt from rulemaking requirements prohibiting the public from effectively opposing any and all department rules that take on the force and effect of law without ever having been voted on by you, their elected officials. Then the second one is on line 3.5, where there will be established a new centralized trauma registry to take the place of three separate systems the department has used to gather private data piecemeal on individuals. In the 2010 report, it is of interest to us that the department claims legislative authority to collect this data but does not provide a citation. So we are left from a 2004 report, and the recodification table up on the top of page 2 on the right side to assume that this is using the controversial 1992, which would make about 17 years, all patient data is government data statute. 62J302 and 62J321, which specifically forbid patient consent for government access to every detail of every medical record. We have long been on record opposing that particular statute. We now understand that they are using the TBI and the spinal cord injury definition in the 2005 trauma registry law. So those are two different registries. Notably, they now intend to repeal the brain injury limits for the trauma registry in favor of a law that would allow every injury from every person to be reported to the government, according to this broader statute, which Senator Hand mentioned. the definition for the current registry in 144.603, only brain and spinal cord injuries, would be expanded to include the following definition. And because Senator Hand has already given it, I'm not going to give it to you as well, but we look at that definition as being very broad because of the impairment of cognitive and mental abilities, no definition there. The impairment of physical functioning, no definition there. The disturbance of behavioral and emotional functioning. There's really nothing in the statute to say that the health department can't define that as broadly as they wish. And not only reported, but the government would be empowered to track every patient's outcome indefinitely and to track all treatment decisions. As far as we can say, there's nothing to prohibit that. Phase 3 of the 2010 report, as you can see on your handout, makes it clear that the plan is to track patients after the injury. The title of Phase 3 also clarifies the intent to impose government-endorsed treatment guidelines on patients. Hospitals will undoubtedly have to follow them to keep their trauma hospital designation status and the federal funds that are attached to that status. And additionally, the intent is to use patients captured in the trauma registry for research, as the title also notes. And it asks for a half-time person to conduct the research. So there's definitely research happening here. Page 10 of the 2010 report also notes that the department's vision for the trauma system is full integration in the public health system, which this bill would do. So our organization does not believe that residents of Minnesota want their medical records, their treatment regimens, and their physical and mental health status to be fully integrated with the state health department. This bill extends and deepens the department's ongoing violation of constitutional rights, patient rights, and privacy rights. Minnesota has, unfortunately, had a long history of conducting surveillance on citizens without their consent, as our new information card here points out, and if a page could come and pick this one up.
Thank you.
That would be handy, and then I'll just finalize my comments by saying that such surveillance and medical interference activities must not be extended into new centralized systems. Instead, they really should come to an end. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brace. Any questions for the witness? If not, Senator Coring moves that Senate File 2866 be recommended to pass and be referred to state and local government.
As amended.
All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
The motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much.
Next in the agenda, we have Senate File 2923 from Senator Erickson Robes. Senator,
good evening,
we are ready.
Madam Chair, committee members, I have a fairly easy bill for you this evening. This is a department bill from the Department of Health, largely full of technical and clarifying corrections, and I'll get into a little bit more of some of the detail. But basically, this is a bill that has to do with home care and assisted living licensing, and it streamlines the state licensing laws and improves some consumer protection. Just to give you a little bit of background, this bill is the work of the Home Care Regulatory Work Group, which is a group of 12 different statewide organizations consisting of members of Minnesota Department of Health, Care Providers of Minnesota, Aging Services, the Board of Nursing, Minnesota Nurses Association, AARP, Alzheimer's Association, and many more. They've been working for months updating the regulatory technical provisions and coming up with some suggestions that will help streamline the process. I will just run through a couple of the things in the proposals, and then we have Susan Winkleman here from the department to answer any further questions that you might have. Again, these proposals from the Home Care Regulatory Work Group cover clarifying that Minnesota Department of Health can impose a conditional license on a provider in addition to suspending or revoking a license if their particular conditions met. It also allows MDH to set terms to be completed by the provider while their license is being suspended, instead of just waiting until the end of the suspension period to check for progress. It also requires that providers whose licenses are being revoked or suspended, that they have to disclose some information about their clients so MDH can help with care coordination as they move patients from a provider whose license has been suspended or revoked into another provider. It also prohibits a provider whose home care license has been revoked or not renewed by MDH from kind of doing an end run around the system and getting another license or obtaining status through the personal care provider agencies. The good news about this bill is it has no fiscal note, and it's relatively non-controversial, basically technical changes, and I will have Susan Winkleman talk about some of the other provisions, if she wants to do that. And basically, it's the end result of a lot of work done by the regulatory working group.
Thank you. Ms. Winkleman, you can provide some testimony or be available for questions if people have questions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just to introduce myself, I'm Susan Winkleman, the Assistant Division Director in the Division of Compliance Monitoring in the Minnesota Department of Health. And Senator Erickson-Ropes did a fine job of summarizing it, so I'd be available for questions.
Thank you. Members, any questions for Senator Erickson-Ropes or Ms. Winkleman? Anybody in the audience who wishes to testify against this bill? If not, Senator Erickson-Ropes, would you like to present a motion?
Thank you. I will, and I just want to let you know that the Home Care Regulatory Working Group is continuing to work on other aspects related to licensing of home care and assisted living programs. So this is one set of regulations and recommendations that they're bringing forward. They're still working on others, and we'll be seeing some more of that action. So, having said that, I move that Senate File 2923. Oh, I'm sorry. Is there an amendment?
I don't think so. No, you didn't put an amendment.
I think we had one-word amendment of or somewhere.
Two words. Getting clients guardian.
We did not move an amendment, Senator. So,
no,
if you have an amendment, you have to move it before you move the bill.
Okay.
Oh, well.
Do you know where it is? It's a very minor technical change.
Does the staff have any record of an amendment that we had to move on this bill?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of one.
Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Madam Chair, if you look on page 4, line 28, we'd recommend before or insert comma, client's legal guardian.
What place? What? Where?
Excuse me. Senator, could you repeat that?
Is that the right one? I might be looking at an old reference here to the exact.
4.3.
No, we don't have 28 in page 1.
It's yes. Still
okay.
4.3.
Yes, page 4, line 28, before or insert comma, client's legal guardian.
There's no or on that line.
Cirrus.
Looking at.
No, it's not in our version.
On the wrong bill. I'm sorry. Sorry.
Okay, so we have on line 28. Could you repeat that? Excuse me.
Page 4, so line 28, before or, insert, comma, client's legal guardian, comma.
On that motion, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. Motion is adopted. Senator,
you.
Now you can move your bill.
Now I will move that Senate File 2923 as amended be recommended to pass and
sent to the floor.
Referred to the floor.
On that motion, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted.
Thank you,
Senator.
Very much.
Thank you. We have Senator Lurie. Senate File 2852.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Lurie.
Senate File 2852. This is an agency bill brought to me. It's to clean up some issues with the Administrative Simplification Act. Just as a little bit of background, many of you may remember we required of all providers and all payers across the state that they begin with three of the highest volume transactions to be conducted electronically a couple of years ago. Those would be eligibility verifications, healthcare billing claims, and then remittance advice, what happened with the claim. And all of those need to be done electronically. And the result of this law will be, when it's fully implemented, more than $60 million annual savings to the system. As this has developed, healthcare providers and payers often use an intermediary or a clearinghouse to help them translate or exchange these transactions. And most of these clearinghouses, most of this has actually worked very well, and most of the clearinghouses do use industry best practices, but recent experience has shown that a few clearinghouses have some barriers to the timely and efficient exchange of routine administrative transactions. And this bill is aimed at making sure that clearinghouses are incorporated and the transactions that are funneled through clearinghouses are incorporated in this Administrative Simplification Act. Those barriers that it specifically addresses are that sometimes clearinghouses are not responding to information requests needed by healthcare providers and payers, so this requires that they provide good information to those entities that they are acting as an agent for. Sometimes they are not sending acknowledgments or receipts of transactions. This would be one of those best practices. It is a standard transaction. Just to say, when one of these three transactions is sent out, you should send back a thing saying, "Hey, I got it." Pretty simple, and that is a best practice. So it would be required of the clearinghouses. And some of the clearinghouses are offering only limited connectivity to other clearinghouses or networks, so this would require a broader connectivity. And sometimes transactions are delayed or lost, incorrectly sent to wrong locations. This is, would actually be handled by the requirement that the clearinghouses send a receipt of the transaction. So that's really what the bill gets at. We don't know of any opposition to the bill. Minnesota Hospital Association, the provider groups, Council of Health Plans, the payers have all worked on it. And I do have an A1 amendment, an author's amendment, that I need to move to clear up a couple of
Thank you.
Relatively
technical. Do we have the amendment? Here it is. Yes, we do, Senator.
So I would move the A1 amendment.
Thank you. All of those in favor of the amendment signifying by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Senator. That is the broad outlines of the bill. I do have Jim Golden here, the director of the Division of Health Policy at the Department of Health, and would stand for any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Lurie or Mr. Golden? Dr. Golden, excuse me. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair and Mr. Golden, do you know of any organization that in the, that's operating in the state that would be put out of business because of this bill?
Mr. Golden.
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, no, I do not.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Lurie, would you like to move your bill?
I would move that Senate File 2852, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection.
All of those in favor of that motion signifying by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and I'll be able to make Duluth days.
Thank you. With no other business, this committee is adjourning. Thank you.